So, Dr. Zhou, thank you very much for the opportunity spontaneously on this workshop to interview you. When I look at the internet or in your books, there's a lot written about what else you did throughout your life. So could you talk a little bit of what you're doing and who you are?
Sure. I think that this is a time in history where it's not enough to know. This is a time in history to know how. So my passion, Dirk, is to demystify the mystical, so that every person has within their reach all the tools to make necessary changes within them and in their lives. Now, science happens to be the contemporary language of mysticism to me. The moment you start talking about religion or culture or tradition, you divide an audience. But science creates community and it unifies. So my interest then is to blend the fields of quantum physics and mind and neuroscience and neuroendocrinology and cellular biology and epigenetics and psychoneuroimmunology to give people the understanding about potential. So if knowledge is power, then knowledge about yourself is self-empowerment. And I want people to become self-empowered enough to apply these principles to see that they can become the scientists in their own life. And they can measure the effects of themselves at cause. So I have done enormous amounts of research in helping people to begin the process of personal transformation.
How could you measure this? Because yesterday you said it has to do with proteins when you be the creator. So how could you measure this? How could you scientifically prove that something changed?
Well, that's where my interests are right now. So in our advanced workshops, for example, people who come to a progressive workshop like this weekend, they have the opportunity to continue to work. And so we'll bring together a community of 450 to 500 people, and we'll go through a series of days. They'll come in, some people will get their brain scanned, and they'll go through 4 days of training, and then we'll scan their brain at the end. So a pre and a post. We'll also measure people's brains during meditation. We'll measure people's heart when they're expressing gratitude, when they're expressing kindness and love and caring, and when they're frustrated and impatient. And we'll teach them how to regulate that internal state.
Okay.
That's really programming their autonomic nervous system. We'll also measure their saliva and their urine, and we'll measure certain values. They'll go through 4 days of intense training, and we'll measure very specific metabolites and neurohormones to see if there's been genetic changes that took place after 4 days.
Okay.
Now, there's a lot of variables, but we know that if we're looking for very specific things, very specific markers and indicators, we'll know then we can correlate some of those changes with changes in brain function, changes in the energy of their body, changes in the energy of the room. We can start correlating and beginning to match those changes so we have a bigger model of understanding so we can teach this even better the next time.
Okay. So, and you said it's a statement, it goes even so far that your genes are waiting to be activated. I mean, this is revolutionary.
Well, the central dogma, it's called the central dogma in science, is that our genes are our destiny. And that's absolutely not the truth. Our genes are a library of potential. Now, to me, certain genes are more hardwired than others, just like the brain has certain areas that are more hardwired than others. If you're born with a genetic condition, like a type 1 diabetes or sickle cell anemia, the gene has been programmed in utero. That's a very difficult thing to overcome because the gene's already activated. That's 5% of people on the planet. The other 95%, we develop those diseases from lifestyle and choices and behaviors. So that's called a chronic condition. And medicine doesn't really like to address chronic conditions other than using pharmaceuticals because it requires a lifestyle change. So the latest research in epigenetics shows that when you learn something new, you make a different choice. You demonstrate a different behavior. You have a very profound experience. You embrace a new emotion. There are definitely genes signaled as a result of that. So genes are like Christmas tree lights. They're turning on and off all the time. You upregulate them for growth and health, mm-hmm. and you downregulate them or turn them off for disease. Mm-hmm. So my interest then is to select and instruct the right gene that causes the person who signaled the wrong gene in the wrong way because of lifestyle to turn that gene down and stimulate a new gene that could create health. So we have 98% of our DNA waiting to be activated with the right signal.
Okay. So something in psychotherapy I experience is a very big theme when you work with people, and I didn't hear it so far in here. So the question is ecology. So for example, someone feels to be victimized, and that's his story, and that's how he lives his life, and now he starts to create a new life. Now, for example, he could create more victimizing in his life. Is that an option?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. But you know, this is why change is so hard. Because the hardest part about change is not making the same choice as you did the day before. So the person overcomes certain conditions in their life, but they have to make different choices. They have to be able to pay attention to their thoughts.
Oh, I see.
Become aware of their
awareness.
Behaviors.
I see.
And they have to observe those emotions. And the more they're conscious of those unconscious programs, the less unconscious they become. Okay. So this is the fundamental reason why people return back to the same life, because they return back to the same familiar emotions because they've identified with them for so long. Stepping out into that unknown, stepping out into that void, mm-hmm. and staying there, mm-hmm. and creating from there is where the true magic happens.
So that's as soon as you observe your behavior, you're out of the unconscious pattern.
Is that you're no longer the program. Right. You're the consciousness observing the program.
You're observer, and you can start consciously to create whatever you want to create.
Right. You can begin to go from the old self to the new self, and it's going to feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. It's going to feel unfamiliar. It's going to be unpredictable because you are in the realm of the unknown. Mm-hmm. Most people run back to the known. Mm-hmm. But until we understand that unknown is where we create from. You can't create from the known. Mm-hmm. You get more of the known.
Right. Yeah. Now you also said cause effect is the old story. The new story is causing effect. What exactly? I know cause-effect, of course.
Because sure, I mean, I think most people wait for something outside of them to change something inside of them. They wait for their wealth to come. They wait for their new relationship. They wait for the new experience to feel joy or gratitude or to be in love with life. That's the old model of reality. That's Newtonian. Something outside of you changes something inside of you. You notice that you feel differently inside of you, good or bad. You pay attention to whoever or whatever caused it. That's cause and effect. That's a victim to your environment. That's your personal reality affecting your personality. The quantum model of reality is about causing an effect. Mm-hmm. It's about your personality beginning to affect your personal reality. So then when you make internal changes in how you think and how you feel, that a clear intention and elevated emotion begins to affect your very destiny. So the replication of the process in creating a new state of being should be measured in your outer world. Mm-hmm. And that's the quantum model. So when a person continues to make their internal changes, and all of a sudden they see the universe organizing events in their life equal to their new state of being, they're causing an effect.
What means wisdom to you?
I've thought a lot about wisdom because that word is used so often.
Right.
And I think that we learn information philosophically. Mm-hmm. We learn it theoretically. And that's semantics. A certain number of people will apply that information, will personalize it, will demonstrate it. They'll initiate that philosophy. And if they do it properly and do it right, they get their behaviors to match their intentions, they're going to have a new experience. A new experience then reorganizes the circuits and enriches the connections in their brain, and then the brain makes a chemical. And that chemical is called a feeling or an emotion. So you can read the book on being a leader. You could read the book on being a great parent. You could read the book on compassion, but that's all philosophy. Until you actually apply those principles to your life, when you feel compassion, when you feel like a leader, when you feel like a patient person, and you experience the emotion, now you're teaching your body chemically to understand what your mind is intellectually understood.
Okay.
So knowledge is for the mind and experience is for the body. And in that moment, you're embodying knowledge. But it's not enough to do it once. You have to repeat the experience. You have to be able to do it on command, at will. And if you're able to know that you know how to do it, That means that you've done it so many times that neurologically and chemically, you've conditioned your body to know how to do it as well as your mind. And when the mind and the body merge as one, now you're in a state of being. Now you are mastering it. Now it's becoming wisdom. So when you know that you know how to do something, you're beginning to become wise. Now, in my understanding of wisdom, we all have experiences in our life that brand us emotionally. And the emotion then keeps us connected to the past. When we finally overcome the emotion, now we're free to create something new. And the memory without the emotional charge is called wisdom, because now you're no longer anchored to the past, and the soul now, who loves and wants to experience the unknown, is free now to begin to experience a new event in our lives. We can't experience anything new if we're connected to familiar emotions, because the soul hasn't gained the wisdom to move on.
And now you are wisdom.
Yes, the wisdom is stored in the soul.
And you are just wisdom, right. I started with a personal question. Dr. Joe, if I may, I'd like to end with a personal question. What anxious you? What are you afraid of?
Oh, gosh. I'm a normal guy.
Okay.
And I'm a work in progress. And I think the challenge that I face on a deep level is I don't really care what people think of me any longer. I really don't care what they say about me any longer. I know implicitly that I'm contributing to people's lives because I'm seeing it on a regular basis. I guess my fear, more than anything else, is that we become fooled in some way by who we really are. I think we are profoundly dimensional beings, and that we have an opportunity really to form communities.
Okay.
And living by the program of news and bad news and consumption and corporations and consumerism keeps us selfish, and we never really will bond as a world. And so I'm afraid that we miss that window where we finally break through and start developing a whole new way of life, that where we're considerate of others and that we're heart-centered, and that we form structures that really help our species to evolve instead of de-evolve. So I guess my big fear is that what I'm doing ultimately doesn't produce enough change in the world.
Okay. Thank you very much for your openness.
Thank
you.
Welcome.